Agricultural Lands Discharge Program, and I'll call on Ben Zabinski.
Good afternoon, members of the board. My name is Ben Zabinski. I'm working the Adaptive Watershed Management Unit. And I'm going to be giving a presentation on, or an update on the Agricultural Lands Discharge Program that the staff is developing. Okay, so last time we presented was in September of 2013. And I'm going to give an update on what we've done since then. I'm going to talk about the permits that we're developing, describe in their common elements in general, what they're made up of. And then I'm going to get into the specifics of the different permits that we're working on that are shown up there. A particular focus on Tule Lake today being the first permit that we're moving forward with. So, to date, we've been working on an agricultural program since 2011. We put together a stakeholder group, probably about 80 stakeholders. We started out doing with a region-wide approach and developing a region-wide permit. So, since then, we've changed the scope of the program, and we've moved to developing separate permits for based on commodity and specific geographic areas. But this stakeholder group that we've had, it's really given the staff a chance to become acquainted with the agricultural areas in the region, and also to become familiar with the issues. And we've done a lot of outreach to the communities. So this gives an overview of our region and the different agricultural areas. The Agricultural Lands Program is an umbrella program. It covers the different permits and programs for agriculture we have. Some of those are existing, others are under development. And just on the map here, most of these areas are covered or will be covered through the ag program. The existing permits include WDRs, conditional waiver, and MPDS permit for cow dairies in the region. There's conditional waivers in the Scott and Shasta watershed that came out of the TMDL for those watersheds. And currently under development, we have the cannabis cultivation permit that you heard about for waste discharges from cultivation that you heard about earlier today. And we're working on agricultural lands in the Tule Lake Basin, lily bulb cultivation, vineyards and orchards, and also participating in a statewide project to address grazing. So we have moved from the region-wide approach to this more commodity-specific approach, geographic area. And we've been meeting with the stakeholders in smaller groups now. Those interests were all part of the larger stakeholder group, and now it's kind of been broken into the different areas of the region, and we're meeting more informally with those groups. We're also starting to draft permits. You heard about the cannabis cultivation. We're also working on the agricultural lands in the Tule Lake Basin permit, and just starting on the lily bulb permit. The focus is on Tule Lake Basin. So the general approach is to develop a working draft of these permits that would be brought to the advisory groups, and then in taking their input, put together the public review draft. So we're going to be doing that for Tule Lake this year. Okay. So here's some of the common elements that all these permits would share, and this is by design. This is out of the non-point source policy. Non-point source permits contain these elements and this approach in general. There's a requirement to implement management practices that in the context of agriculture will involve a planning requirement to develop a plan. And there has to be monitoring with tracking practice implementation and effectiveness, and also monitoring that involves water quality sampling as well. There's going to be an option to join a third-party group. That's something that we're looking at within these permits, and that's something that's allowed for in the non-point source policy. And that is a larger program that individual growers could participate in to fulfill some of the requirements of the permits. The approach also includes spot check inspections by regional board staff, as well as enforcement. So I'm going to focus on the Tule Lake Basin, and this shows the Tule Lake and the wildlife refuge surrounding it. It's commercially farmed. And this map shows in the upper, here we go. This is where Tule Lake is, all the way up there. It straddles Siskiyou and Modoc County. So Tule Lake is part of this Klamath Irrigation Project, which is on the on both sides of the border in Oregon and California. The border is down here, and this is circles the area that we're dealing with the Tule Lake Basin. So in general, just to describe this irrigation project, the Lost River comes in from here, and this is used as a water supply for these lands here. There's water diversions from the Klamath River. This is the headwaters of the Klamath River coming out of Upper Klamath Lake. So this water is diverted over into the Lost River, which is used as a conveyance to supply the project. There's farmland here, and the drainage is in this direction. It heads down here, and water is taken out here to supply this area. It collects in Tule Lake, which is also called the Tule Lake Sumps. It's pumped through this mountain in Sheepy Ridge to Lower Klamath Lake. This is a wildlife refuge, and then it exits there. There's another irrigation district here in Oregon, and that water is combined and eventually goes back to the Klamath River through these KSD pumps, which are the Klamath Straits drain pumps. So Tule Lake, let me just describe this a little bit. So there's about 64,000 acres of farmland in Tule Lake. There's about 18,000 acres of federal land. This land is leased to individual growers. And the lease land is the lease lands are managed by the Fish and Wildlife Service. It's a U.S. wildlife refuge. And the lease land program is run by the Bureau of Reclamation. So the majority of the discharges in this area through the agricultural lands are delivered through an irrigation drainage network, which eventually ends up in Tule Lake. So this gives an overview of the types of crops in the area. The majority of it is alfalfa and cereal grains. there's a typically a rotation of 8 to 10 years where something could be planted to grains or alfalfa, and then that would be rotated towards a higher value row crop, such as potatoes or onions. And there's different kinds of irrigation. The majority is sprinkler irrigation, but there is a division on the private lands. The majority is sprinkler irrigation, wheel lines, pivot lines, and in the lease land is actually mostly flood irrigation and furrow irrigation, because there's no electricity there. So that's the way that is irrigated. So this shows a closer look. And so this is the area that we're dealing with. You can see so as I was describing, the water comes in. There's a reservoir here, Anderson Rose Dam, and it's diverted into the J Canal. So this is the main supply line, and the water drains this way in general towards the sump. The private land drains to the lease land. So there's another canal here that intercepts, or there's pumps going from the drains to this canal that then is recycled and used on the lease lands before being pumped into the lake. And you can see this is like a 1 mile stretch right here, the Lost River. So that's where the Lost River is in California. And then here's this huge pump here, which is going through the mountain, as I showed in the other one over to the other slide over to the Lower Klamath Refuge. Okay, this shows a bit of a closer look. So this is that same area. This is the lease land. This is the private land. So you can see this shows the water supply canals and which way it's going. And here's that drainage that goes in, that's pumped into this canal. So this can all be, the water in here actually can flow both ways. So this water can be moved around and adjusted as the need arises during the irrigation season. But the general flow is this way. There's also a drainage network here that drains the water into these pumps that pump into Tule Lake. So there's discharges from each individual field, but then there's these larger collection areas that are discharged into the lake. So looking closer at this circle right here, just to give you an even closer look. So this is the private land, and here's what I was talking about, where there's a drain that comes by collecting runoff, subsurface runoff from the field, and then it's pumped into this canal, and then that feeds the lease land. So if you go to Tule Lake, I mean, this is kind of typical of what you see. You're surrounded by canals and drains, and the water, you're not sure which way the water is flowing, and sometimes it does flow in both directions. So I'm going to talk about the source water quality and then the discharges. So the source water, it originates in Upper Klamath Lake and the Klamath River. That water is characterized by high nutrients and organic content, large diurnal swings in pH and dissolved oxygen. Of course, these are the impairments that the TMDL was dealing with in the Klamath Basin and the Lost River. So this is the source water for the irrigation project is already degraded. So this graph over here shows what the inputs to the irrigation district are. So again, the irrigation district is where these farms are. The majority of the farms in the Tule Lake Basin that would fall under the scope of this permit are served by this irrigation district. And TID stands for Tule Lake Irrigation District. So the water originates in Upper Klamath Lake, but it's delivered by different means. So it's about a third each, and I'll go through these. So one of the delivery mechanisms for this water is water that drains from these fields into the Lost River, comes down the Lost River and is diverted into the canal. There's another source, which is this irrigation district here, has its own drains that go directly into this irrigation canal. And there's also these direct water diversions into the Lost River. So while the water is originally from Upper Klamath Lake, some of it has already been used once, twice, before it reaches the Tule Lake area, depending on where it's been diverted from. Okay, and again, actually I was supposed to switch to this slide, but anyway, these drains come in up here. So when we're looking at the discharges on the field level, this is kind of showing a typical field setup in Tule Lake. Conceptually, there are these pretty deep ditches on either side of the field that are intended to drain the groundwater table to provide drainage for the plants. So a lot of the discharges from the fields are subsurface, where they're applying sprinkler irrigation, flood irrigation. It's percolating through the soil, mixing with the groundwater and ending up in the drain. So that's at the field level. And then we have, again, these larger discharge from the system level at this point, and then at these points, these pumps around the lake. Okay, so I'm mentioning this because, you know, these are the points that we're going to be dealing with in terms of improvement to water quality. This is what we're regulating. I'm showing you what we're trying to get a handle on. And we're going to be looking at to see the effectiveness of the program and whether we're meeting our goals. So back to the permit development. So the permit is going to include surface and groundwater for discharges associated with agricultural lands in the Tule Lake Basin. So that's the scope. It's going to include the private land and these federal lease lands. We have the lands owned by managed by the federal government and leased to private landowners. And it's also going to include the Tule Lake irrigation drain maintenance activities, which include removal of excess vegetation, sediment from the drains and canals, also repair of the pumps and the drainage infrastructure. So the way that the ownership of the canals and drains, the drains are owned by the landowner, right? But there's a right of way for the Bureau of Reclamation. And the landowner owns to the center line of each drain and canal that borders their field. And there's a right-of-way for the Bureau, and then there's maintenance done by the irrigation district. So there's three parties involved in the drains themselves. And the roads are similar, where they're county roads that are owned by the landowners, but there's a county easement for the roads. So right now we're undecided on whether this will be a WDR or waiver, but I just wanted to note that the agricultural stakeholders have expressed to us a preference for general waste discharge requirements. Okay. So what are the goals for the Tule Lake Basin? Well, the overall goals for restoration of the Lost River and Klamath River can be taken from the TMDL. That addressed the pH and dissolved oxygen impairments, set load allocations for the Lost River and the Klamath River, and also for the Tule Lake area. The Tule Lake was one of the major areas addressed in the model that set the load allocations. In general, the TMDLs required a 50% load reduction at these different modeling points. So I wanted to mention that meeting this load reduction is part of a larger effort with the majority of the reductions needed in Upper Klamath Lake that is the major source of nutrients to the Klamath River and the Lost River. So just wanted to put it in context that the agricultural contributions of nutrients and organic matter is a piece of a larger restoration approach to the Klamath River. Okay. So what can we look at? I mean, the goal of the permit is to manage water quality and to implement management practices on the farm, and take a look and to minimize the contribution of the pollutants that we're concerned with in the area. So the permit's going to include monitoring, and I have a diagram here showing the feedback loop for monitoring. I wanted to point out that right now we can focus on implementation of management practices and management practice effectiveness, and that can be monitored in terms of tracking implementation, how effective are the BMPs on the ground. And the other type of monitoring, looking at in-stream water quality, upstream and downstream, due to the complexities in the system that I've been describing, we're working with the stakeholders to find out how to get a handle on that. And the challenge with that is to differentiate the contribution from agriculture from the larger context of the Klamath Basin and all of these background sources and legacy sources. So due to the nature of the way the water is moved around, it takes a specialized monitoring effort if you want to get a grasp on what is actually coming due to the agricultural activities. So there's that challenge, and there's ongoing monitoring, though. I mean, the overall goal is to improve water quality, restore the Lost River and the Klamath River, and that's something that the monitoring for this program can be coordinated with larger monitoring efforts going on in the basin. There's a umbrella monitoring group for the entire Upper Klamath Basin, the Klamath Basin Monitoring Program, and there's also that group has a stewardship effort that can coordinate projects and also maybe fulfill some of the reporting requirements of the permit. So here's some of the outreach that we've been doing. So we've developed some informational documents that we've shared with the advisory group and also with the agricultural stakeholders. We developed guidelines for a third-party program. One of the main things we're working on in the Tule Lake area is to put together a third-party program that can assist the growers in complying with the permit and kind of coordinate the program with us. So we've done outreach. We've met with agricultural environmental stakeholders last year in January and March. We presented to the Siskiyou County Board of Supervisors, and we also recently did a presentation to this Upper Klamath group that I just mentioned, the stewardship group in Klamath Falls, last November. So again, one of the purposes of doing this outreach is to work with stakeholders and start to develop a third-party program that then can be used to comply with the upcoming permit. So the Tule Lake Irrigation District, the Lava Beds Butte Valley RCD Resource Conservation District, and the Klamath Water Users Association have expressed interest in leading this third-party program, and they've outlined potential roles that program would play. So at the request of the Irrigation District, staff put together a informational letter to the landowners in Tule Lake describing the program, doing initial outreach. They paired that letter with a letter that they authored that explained how they're developing this third-party program and to kind of gauge the interest and to begin to engage people. So that was sent out in September of 2014. And then the Irrigation District, we weren't present, held a workshop with the growers to present this potential role and start to get the ball rolling with this program. And that happened in October 2014. And the reports from that were positive that there was interest. But I think that we need to continue to build on that. So here's some of the roles that the third party might fill, potentially. And this is what they've expressed to us that they would like to do. Collecting fees and enrollment, and that gives them a break on the state fee schedule. Developing a group water quality management plan that would outline management practices that the growers would then adapt to their specific farm. Developing a group reporting plan, providing technical assistance and education, outreach about the program, help with grants, things like that. One thing that some other third parties do provide, like a third party certification program, that's not actually one of the things that they're roles that they're interested in fulfilling. And that would likely fall to the regional board. Certification programs could have audits and on-site inspections done by the third party, and that's not something that they want to do in this instance. So then going to the regional board's role, and our role is really to provide oversight to the third party program and to make sure that they are effective and that their participants are complying. You know, we want to work with the third party to coordinate the program and work together to get the program, the permit implemented. So to that end, we would be reviewing third party reports and plans, working with individuals, ensuring that they're complying, doing our site inspections. And then one of the provisions, you know, in this, the provisions for a third party to qualify to implement the permit would be spelled out in the permit. And one of those provisions would be that we're thinking about is that the executive officer must approve the third party functions, and that they have the capacity to fulfill that function, and that their requirements that they have in their program are equivalent or better than the permit requirements. Okay, so that's where we're at with the Tule Lake permit. We're working on a draft permit. This will be a working preliminary draft that will go to the advisory group. Again, this will be prior to the public review draft. We'd like to have that done by April and May of 2015 and have that meeting. And then we would revise that from there to develop the public review. So we're going to be working with the Klamath Water Users Association, the Resource Conservation District, and the Irrigation District. Like I said, those are the three entities that are interested in heading up this third-party program. So we're going to work with them to start developing a water quality plan, get together BMPs, start to put the pieces together for how the program's going to be implemented. And we want to work with all stakeholders on monitoring and reporting, and the assurance that compliance assurance that the third party is going to function in the way that we want it to, and that there's sufficient feedback. Another element is working with Oregon. They have their own regulatory programs in Oregon to implement their TMDL in the Klamath and Lost River. They're all part of the Klamath Irrigation Project, so it'd be good to have consistency with Oregon in the requirements of the growers. So we're looking to have a public review draft for ready in fall of 2015 with the CEQA analysis, and heading towards a regional board hearing early next year. So that's it on Tule Lake. I wanted to pause here before I go on to lily bulbs and vineyards, and I promise that's obviously not going to be nearly as long. So the focus was on Tule Lake.
Okay, board member.
Question. Ben, thank you. Very thorough. And I enjoyed the schematics of showing that water can move uphill and downhill at the same time.
Right.
I guess it's all flat.
All It's flat. Right.
It was on slide 17 or 18. I had a question, and you were talking about, it was a slide that talked about the, I guess the farmers preferring a WDR as opposed to a waiver.
Yeah.
It wasn't clear to me on the federal lease lands who the permit would be issued to. Is it issued to the individual lessee or to the agency? In this case, it'd be Bureau of Rec.
Right. Well, it's the Fish and Wildlife Service. Actually, the Rec administers it's like a lottery to see who gets the leases, but both. So we name operators and owners in permits typically. So the permit would be for both.
For both.
Yep. Uh-huh. So what may happen on the lease land is that we'll have this third-party program, but the lease land and the refuge may have its own requirements and a separate cutout in the water quality plan for practices on the lease lands. And they already have that to some degree. There are some different practices and requirements. And that's going to be necessary. I mean, there's different types of irrigation there, like I was talking about.
And given the fact that this water is used more than once before it gets to the river,
right?
Is there the potential to create another Kesterson? Maybe not with selenium, but concentrations of other chemicals or salts. The fact that the water keeps getting used, keeps going over this land, and is being collected before it goes to the river.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely one of the considerations that they need to look at, we need to look at as well.
Is there any trend analysis that anybody's watching to ensure that that's not happening?
I don't think I know the answer to that question. What I've heard is that they are having problems with salt. I haven't heard anything about selenium, but they are having
problems. Selenium is unusual for Kesterson, but I'm using that as an example.
Yeah, salt accumulation is a huge problem in this type of setup. And in when they pump the water through to the Lower Klamath Refuge, I've spoken to the Lower Klamath Refuge managers that are saying, yes, that is a problem because they don't have the type of drainage that the irrigation district provides, that keeps the salts flushed through the soil. And some areas of the refuge, they are having salt building up, and the soil is no good anymore for support.
Do me a favor, will you? See if you can find somebody who's trending that, who's collecting data, and maybe the next time you come, you can share some field data on what the trends might be of concentrations of product A, B, or C.
Okay.
Okay, I'd appreciate that. But I think that's important to make sure that we've had horrible examples in the past, and it'd be nice to avoid something like that if we're monitoring it and watching trends.
If you'd like, Clayton Krager, there could provide some additional insight into that. I mean, as part of the Lost River and the Klamath River TMDLs, there was quite a bit of analysis of trends in water quality conditions passing through the Klamath Irrigation Project.
Maybe we can do that offline. I don't know if we have any more time, but if somebody can answer that question for me,
we
can take it up at a later time.
We have some information on that.
All right, thanks.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Ben, thank you for the presentation. Couple questions. So do you contemplate then a point of compliance on this permit to be the outfall from the Tule Lake or from Sheepy Ridge then? In the tunnel, essentially, do we have one point of compliance, essentially?
Well, I don't think that would necessarily be appropriate, being that there's so many factors and the source water is so degraded prior to being used on the irrigation land that I don't think that would be the best place to monitor compliance. I think that obviously needs to be looked at in terms of tracking trends and that's a main point in the system. But I think preferably from my perspective, trying to parse out what is the contribution of agriculture, looking a little bit closer at an agricultural area, maybe a small area of the irrigation district to try and just get a handle on the upstream, downstream water quality, I think would be more appropriate.
Well, one reason why I ask you is because, this is part of a big engineered system, right? That you have the A canal that comes out of the Klamath system. You have contribution from Lost River comes out of Clear Lake. and yet it discharges from through Sheepy Ridge and goes out straight strain to the Klamath.
Right.
And we have had discussions, say, from Clayton in the use of diffuse wetlands out there. So does that offer, and my point is kind of to get an understanding of boundary, because does the use of diffuse wetlands then, because of the connection of this system to the Klamath system, is that contemplated? Do you contemplate that in the permit maybe as a, because we do have degraded water throughout this system, right? And
right.
it's used over and over again. And
yes.
this, some of this is returned tail irrigation water type of thing in a great big engineered system. But some perhaps of the solutions to making this water better as it goes to the final outfall, which is essentially to Klamath River, do you envision then this permit contemplating using something outside of Tule Lake Basin, like say diffuse wetlands and lower Klamath, which has been contemplated under the whole Klamath system TMDL here?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is an opportunity for that. I mean, we need to look at this, the activities in this permit area, the area this permit is going to address in the context of the larger our larger goals and the larger system. So if improvements or water quality are more effectively done at a point outside of the permit area, I mean, I think that the permit needs to provide for that.
Yeah, and I think similarly, you know, this the basin itself also includes Merrill and Malin, and it includes stuff that's in Oregon, right? It includes stuff that's outside of our jurisdictional boundary. Some of the contribution here, you know, comes from others, and I know that you you coordinate that as well. One other part of this too is that the if I remember right, the Lost River TMDL is a technical TMDL that was done by EPA, and that does this give then the implementation legs to that TMDL? Essentially in its entirety then for the impairment that's there?
You want to answer that?
This is Rebecca Fitzgerald of your staff. The Klamath River TMDL, the implementation plan for that was also explicitly for the Lost River system as well. So that has, the Lost River system has the full TMDL package, technical and implementation already in place. And calls out, and that implementation plan calls out working on this permit as one of its implementation actions.
Which is exactly why it's the first of the three that Rebecca and her staff are working on that we're putting our initial focus on, is because of that requirement under the Klamath TMDL action plan.
Well, and also to get to a little bit of what Board Member Giusti asked, you know, there is the federal lands here, the federal lease lands, and then there's the private lands. It's essentially, as I know, served mostly or entirely under the Tule Lake Irrigation District. That is actually a very good thing, I think, in having that structure that's there, and I think you're very smart to use that. And actually, we're very lucky to have them working in companion with us then to have this permit. I have some comments on third-party stuff and certification of that, but I know that we're going to get to that in the next section of your talk, so we'll come back around to that.
Okay.
But thanks. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Just a brief follow-up to Greg's question. The federal lands you said were U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service owned?
Yeah, I mean, they're managed by the Fish and, they're federal land managed by the Fish and Wildlife Service. There's a refuge in Tule Lake in that area I showed, but there's also another Lower Klamath Lake refuge. Now, the Tule Lake refuge has the lease lands and is commercially farmed, where the Lower Lake is managed more towards, I guess, the more as wildlife habitat.
So is that federal owner of the lease lands engaged in your stakeholder process right now?
Yes.
Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you.
Definitely.
Board questions or comments? Okay, proceed with your report.
Okay. Okay, so this is the second in line for my work anyway. And you heard about the cannabis permit that's by being taken care of by another staff. So this will be a quicker update. So the lily bulb cultivation, so this is in Delnor County, where most of this lily bulb cultivation is taking place. Smith River Basin, it's up close to Oregon on the western side of our region. So there's an area where lily bulbs are cultivated, and this permit will address discharges to surface water and groundwater. We met with the growers and environmental interests last year as well. So this is, you know, I'm going to describe here just what we've been doing with regards to this permit. So we requested a water quality plan from the growers, and that was submitted to us last year. We met with them again to work on that, and we're going to continue to revise that plan and work with them. And we're also going to be working with the other stakeholders as well. So one of the main things we've been doing in preparation to develop this permit is to conduct monitor water quality sampling in the Smith River Plain. So we've initiated surface water monitoring in the fall of 2013. That's going to be a two-season monitoring effort to finish up this summer. And the purpose of that is to provide a screening of the Smith River Basin and the tributaries for in the Lilybell production area for pesticides, nutrients, other contaminants. We're taking sediment toxicity samples, aquatic toxicity, and we're also going to be doing groundwater well monitoring this year. Again, with the same purpose of doing a screening and seeing where there's water quality problems. And then based on that, you know, we will most likely have to do follow-up monitoring to look a little bit closer at the sources of any issues that come up, and there also may be actions required based on the results. But we haven't completed the monitoring effort, and we haven't analyzed the results yet, so we're partway through that process. So one of the purposes of doing this is to inform the permit. So it'll tell us what issues we need to look at in the permit specifically, and also where and how much to monitor. And, you know, monitoring will be a part of the Lilybell permit. So this will give us an idea of what that monitoring plan needs to look like. So next steps. So we're going to continue to work with the growers on their water quality plan. And we're going to meet with the advisory group. The same thing that we're doing with Tule Lake, we're going to develop a working draft permit that we'll then share with the advisory group, get their input, and then prepare the public review draft. So that's on a delayed schedule after the Tule Lake permit. So we have scheduled the public review draft for 2016 for this permit.
Ben, could we stop there and take questions on that before you move on to another program?
Yeah.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You use the term water quality plan. Is that a collective plan that all the growers are buying into? It sounded like it, the way you presented it, or will you be requiring each individual grower to come up with their own plan, using that as a template?
Well, the approach we're taking now is, you know, this is similar for most of these ag programs, is to develop a group plan, and they have expressed the interest in doing that. So yes, they have expressed interest in developing a group plan. But of course, you know, I would caveat all these group plans with that there's going to need to be a checklist or something developed on site that would be more specific to their particular piece of land that they're farming. So while you have a group plan, there has to be some degree of customization to it. So it'll be somewhat of a template. So that's the idea.
And like Tule Lake, the lily bulb growers farm on both sides of the border.
Yeah.
Are you in any discussions with Oregon folks about water quality concerns, say, between the border and Brookings, or Smith River and Brookings?
We've had some contact with the Oregon Department of Agriculture, but that's something that we're going to be doing coming up. Yeah.
And, you know, going back several years ago when Temec was found in the groundwater, the nematicide that was used at the time, I kind of picked from your presentation that groundwater monitoring, well monitoring may have stopped at some point and we're reengaging, or has it been a continuous process, say, for the last 25 years?
Yeah, some of the history on that, it hasn't been continuous. But that was, you know, there was significant contamination found in the late 80s, and there was continuous monitoring, I believe, through almost 2000. And, you know, that when they found those chemicals, they stopped using them almost immediately, and that they was monitored, and the amounts were seen to be trailing off. In most of the sites, you know, that's the general idea. So then it was stopped in about 2001. And again, those chemicals are not used anymore. But I think that may have been the last time that we've conducted monitoring there, groundwater monitoring.
Well, I think Rebecca knows, but I'd be happy to talk to you about this offline. But I started my university career with those bulb growers up there, and back in the day when all that blew up. So,
right.
Be happy to talk to you in more detail about this as you, if you go back up there, you know, you want some insights into the industry, I'd be happy to do that for you.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that.
Okay. Any other board member comments or questions? Okay, next item.
Okay, so this is the loan slide on the Vineyards and Orchard program. So we're, you know, this is on a bit of a later schedule, being the third permit that we're planning on working on. But we are doing coordination now, and have been for a while. We've been doing outreach. So this is a permit for vineyards and orchards in the region. And again, address surface water and groundwater. So we've been doing outreach. We've been working with the San Francisco Bay region. We want to make sure that our permits are consistent. There are a number of certification programs in our region and their region, so there's overlap for vineyards and orchards. So that's one of the things that we want to do ahead of developing the permit, is to try and coordinate with those programs so that their requirements are going to be consistent with the upcoming permit requirements, and that they consider water quality, and that they can start to put those pieces into the certification programs ahead of time. And we want to make sure that our process for, you know, this gets back to what I was talking about with third-party programs, is that, you know, we need to provide that assurance that the program is adequate, to that we can rely on it to fulfill those requirements on behalf of the growers. So there's a process for qualifying a program in that'll be laid out in the permit. So we want to make sure that our process and criteria is similar to Region 2, being that these are going to be the same certification programs working in both regions. So we are doing that with the San Francisco region. We also want to make sure our permits are consistent. So the plan for that, also, I want to mention that, you know, one of the needs for that is because they're ahead of us on development of their permit. They have a permit for vineyards in the Sonoma Creek and Napa River watersheds for vineyards that came out of the TMDL for those rivers. So the schedule is to have a draft public review permit in 2017 for that permit. Last but not least.
Any questions?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. So let's come back to third-party stuff, because I've talked to you about this, and just to be out loud about it, is that third-party is a big thing in any of these permits, obviously. Mm-hmm. And, in fact, I believe that it's one of the ways that we're going to get out there and actually be effective, because you can't do it all yourself.
Right.
And third parties, in effect, are really in play here, and especially as it pertains to vineyards and orchards.
Yeah, and I wanted to mention that, you know, third parties are, well, they're nothing new. I mean, in other regions in the state, they're using third parties. They have cooperative monitoring programs. In Region 2, they have a third party for their Tamales Bay grazing permit. We have a third party that functions with our dairy permit. They do group monitoring. So this is a common thing to coordinate.
Let me ask you, Ben, because I don't know this. You mentioned that the process for certification is in the permit, right? And so contemplating that then from here, that's been my concern, is that this permit's not going to be out in draft till 2017 for vineyards and orchards, and yet we have things going on around us, including the development of Region 2. I'm part of, and we've been working on this whole coordination with Region 2. Are you aware of any of it, like our existing permits, that we've developed criteria for third-party ourselves in-house for third-party certification?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the winery process permit for the permit for winery processing wastewater, that's under development, right? That has a section in it that deals with certification of third parties. I'm not sure the specifics of what the third party does.
I think that's probably the extent of it for our region. I do know that other regions include in some of their ag permits, some third-party elements.
Yeah, and I, you know, again, just to be explicit and transparent here, is that is my main issue right now with these permits, is that we have consistency, and then if we're going to use third parties, how do we go about doing that? And simply in this ag permitting for vineyards, because Region 2 is doing things ahead of us, that potentially has implications for us, as you're aware. You know, we're having those conversations, including myself and actually board member Minton as well. So I think that's super important. I think that is going to be the biggest thing that we need to work on, especially given the date of the vineyard permit here.
Right.
And then there's other aspects, by the way, too, that we have regional specificity here with our impairments. We have regional things here that are in play, like VESCO, and we have a temperature policy. We actually now have a restoration policy. Right.
Right.
So yeah, we have some different tools in the toolbox, and we have some different things in play. So this is going to be very interesting.
Right.
So, as you know, keep us informed. Keep me informed as you
okay.
go. Very interested.
Mr. Chair, just
yes.
Have a question. I think it might be for Rebecca. When the Ag Lands Discharge Program started, was it a statewide program, or has it always been regionally based?
It's been pretty regionally based. Regions 5 and 3, the Central Valley and the Central Coast regions, have kind of taken the lead, but even some of the Southern California regions have permits in place for some of their agriculture, like some of their nurseries. We are actually one of the last regions in the state to really put together discharge permits for agricultural discharges.
Well, I'm teeing up for this next one, but I do like the way... you know, I'm comfortable with the way you've done it geographically or specific to a unique crop that has unique characteristics. So I'm supportive of what you're doing. I'm teeing it up for this as we move forward with this statewide plan.
Okay. Yeah, there's a state irrigated lands roundtable, so we coordinate with the other regions, and there's definitely helps to work off their programs.
Any other board comments or questions? I just wanted to reaffirm Board Member Giusti's comment on separating it out by region and agricultural group, I think, is the superior way to do it. And we are floundering around with one ag permit, and I think the reason why is that it's better to specialize.
Yeah, there's too much to account for.
And so I approve the approach.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Okay.
The Statewide Grazing Regulatory Action Project. This is a statewide effort that we're participating in. It's led by Region 6, actually, but it's statewide. And the goal is to develop a strategy to address the potential impacts to water quality from livestock grazing statewide. Where they're at with that, you know, it's not necessarily, this is, again, it's an approach, so it's not necessarily going to result in a state permit. It may be that it's region-wide permits, that's something that they're exploring and trying to figure out which way they're going to go with it. So what they've done recently is they held these listening sessions around the state, looking at getting early public comments on just their approach and where they're headed. and they're looking at bringing a staff proposal to the state board in late 2016, which I think would include whether it's going to be a state permit or region-wide permit, and provide more detail on what they're going to do. So we have one of our staff that's actively engaged in that. Not myself, but it's Scott Gerges.
Mr. Chair, may I ask a question about GREP?
Yeah.
So, Ben, can I ask you, you gave some, you showed a figure that showed kind of the areas where these commodities, you know, the colored picture.
Yeah.
Do you have any indication of the amount of lands that are grazing lands in our region? Anybody have that?
That's dry and irrigated. There's many, many acres of dry grazing land.
Has anybody ever, do you know that?
You know what, we just may. Let me see if I can find that for you. We have a land cover data GIS layer that does at least look at where we have some more of our grasslands, and there's an assumption that can be made of how much of those are grazed, which is probably pretty high. I think we have a lot of grazing happening in our non-forested rural areas, and so I can at least give some rough estimate for you.
Well, the reason why I ask, because actually grazing to me seems to be opposite of these other commodities, right? We essentially have grazing almost everywhere within our region from what I know, and it's dispersed. Sometimes it's concentrated and sometimes it's not. It's interesting. I heard quite a lot in the last week about GRAP from people in our region, and nobody was happy, frankly, that I heard from. I had not one person, and I talked to probably probably 10 different people, either that attended that meeting or had an interest in that meeting in Reading, and nobody was happy. And I also talked to some of our staff as they went to that meeting before it happened. Interesting, because in our region, the fact is, as I know it, is that we have about 50% of our region covered by national forest, which
right.
we do have a grazing component in that thing.
Right.
In fact, we're going to see it sooner than anybody else, because it's coming back for renewal in the next 6 months, I believe. And we're going to see that again. So we have some coverage with grazing.
Right.
And then we have things that are interesting around us. We do have the Tamales Bay grazing waiver program.
Right.
Which is very interesting, because it is out there. It has been around for several years now, and I believe it's fairly well accepted. I think it's third-party run.
Right.
And it's going to be very interesting. Most all the comments I had was is that from people, is they besides the how the meeting went, just is the desire to have something specific to this region, something that's specific that's has third-party stuff in it, because there are third-party interests out here that has the ability for large and small producers to manage their lands in a variety of manners. And it's interesting that we're kind of ahead on this simply because of the National Forest Service waiver that we have, and then also we have other things around us. So I didn't go to that meeting. Board Member Giusti, I know, went, and interesting process. My desire, of course, is that if we could do it here, which I think we already do because of Forest Service mainly, and then it's the private lands. And I know that there's work by third parties now with some of the, whether it be with horse facilities or whether it be beef cattle. We have dairy. We have a dairy permit that covers our dairy stuff, too. So there is some things around. And I'll be very interested in how the Grazing Regulatory Action Plan program actually goes forward, whether it goes at a statewide level or individually.
Right. Yeah.
Board Member Giusti.
If I may. Well, I can say that, you know, the 6 hours it took me to drive to Reading and back and attend the meeting, at least I could say it was one of the worst meetings I've ever attended in the last 5 years. It was a horrible experience. There was nothing at that meeting that would want me to put my name on any plan that came out of that group. So I'm, for one, kind of hinting that I think we could do better at a regional approach. And I'm a subtle man, but I think personally, after what I saw up there, I think we can do a better job, just like you've done here, broken it down. I think we could do a much better job if we took a serious look at developing a regional approach. Just to answer your question, I'm not sure if they include the public lands, but the ag commissioners would give us a ballpark. If you look at their annual crop reports, would give us a good ballpark figure of irrigated and non-irrigated lands on a county-by-county basis, and most of those are online. The biggest complaint I had about the Redding meeting was essentially the state board said, we think there's a grazing problem. We want you to tell us what you think. Well, for the next 3.5 hours, people got up and said, we don't think there's a problem. Go away. And the bumper sticker I came away with that day was scrap the grap. And the presentation was so horrible that the audience was left with no other alternative but to say, go away. And I think we can do a better job than that.
And I think that some of that comes down to establishing the relationship with the people that you're working with.